You're listening to Classic Business with Michael Avery, brought to you by Altra, there when it matters.
Well, we kick off first with our view from the market. So we've got Nessun Nair, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sasfin Wealth, and Makwe Masilela, the CIO of Makwe Fund Managers, in studio back in Johannesburg with your view from the market. Evening, gents.
Good evening, Mike.
Nessun, talk to me about the rand. Firstly, it looks like it's risk on again, broadly speaking. The rand was firmer against most major global currencies this afternoon. I think we gained almost 2% today. Any particular news that's buoying the currency at the moment?
Yeah, we had a fantastic day on the currency today. And, you know, we started off at about 1480 or so, and we're currently around the 1455 level. I think the only sort of driver behind the strong currency is this risk on move. Market beginning to price in a cut by the Federal Reserve at the meeting, which starts today, today and tomorrow. You know, I think maybe a bit of a delayed reaction across risk markets around the world. You know, the Fed has been very dovish, but I think markets is beginning to catch up now. About a month ago, we were pricing maybe one interest rate cut by the Fed this year. Markets beginning to price in two. So things are getting very, very dovish, policy-wise, and not just from the Federal Reserve. I mean, the ECB also coming out and saying that any sort of stimulus would have to begin through a cut in interest rates. And remember, their rates are quite low as well. So I think the... You know, investors extrapolating that it's going to be a much softer interest rate environment for much longer.
And Makwe, with that, we've got our own SARB Governor Lesetsha Khanyaga coming out over the extended long weekend and indicating some of the strongest signals yet to the market that the SARB is now open to cutting rates. Does this mean we can expect a rate cut at the next SARB meeting?
Yeah, I think the market is thinking that come the 18th of July, then chances are they might cut. And given that the last meeting, we had two guys who said, please, can we cut? And the other three said no. So chances are they might cut. And also, just adding on what Nathan just said, you know, for the fact that we've got the Bank of England as well, the Bank of Japan meeting this week. So I think it's more a question of what's happening with central banks. We've already seen the likes of Russia, the likes of India. I mean, already they've started loosening up, and the likes of Australia. So it's more of a central bank story, I think, when it comes to the currencies.
And I think we're all turning Japanese a little bit, Nathan. Where is all the inflation going?
Exactly. I mean, if you look at the bond yields, which long-term bond yields, which are kind of your barometer for where the market expects inflation, certainly in the medium to long term, you know, we've got negative rates in Japan. We've got negative rates in Germany now, you know, Euro bond rates. We've got negative rates in Switzerland. The U.S. 10-year bond rate is hovering at 2%. And you know, not so long ago, it was 3.25%. So the 10-year bond is telling you that we're in a disinflationary environment. Whether we're going to be, completely deflationary, I think only time will tell. But that is providing support, I think, for emerging market bond yields as well. The fact that the environment seems to be conducive to a much lower interest rate environment, very different outlook compared to December last year, you know, when it was anticipated that strong markets and strong economies would give rise to a normalized interest rate environment. Right now, I think market is very concerned about inflation not creeping up high enough.
And within that context, very often when you see a risk-off environment, there's a flight to safe haven assets like gold. This seems to be a bit of a risk-on signal, the fact that we're seeing easing of monetary policy and conditions around the world. The fact that it is in response to slowing global growth must be a concern to investors, and therefore that's the only trigger that I can see behind the gold price, which is now almost at $1,350 an ounce.
Sure.
Mike, do you have thoughts on what's really underpinning this gold price and where we could go from here?
For the fact that we expect interest rates or Reserve Bank, you know, to be more accommodative, so gold tends to do okay because that decreases the opportunity cost of holding gold, as we know that gold itself doesn't yield any interest. So as a result, it looks attractive, and as well, all the tensions happening in the Middle East like that, you know, gold becomes the preferred safe haven. But yeah, it's more a story of we expect interest rates or dovish statements coming out of the U.S. Federal Reserve, then the opportunity cost gets to be decreased. Hence, we see gold doing what it's doing now.
The only negative for South African investors in South African gold companies is that we then have this happening at the same time that we have the rand strengthening. So the rand gold price not perhaps benefiting as much as investors would like. That said, Nesson, what are you expecting to see from the Fed? The market is on Fed watch at the moment. It's going into deliberations today. We'll announce its decision tomorrow. Are you expecting the cut to happen this time round, or just further signals?
I think it's only been, you know, 6 months. So I think that what we're going to hear is, and what the market's going to focus on is the outlook. I think it's going to be a very dovish one. I still think we can get two cuts for the rest of calendar year 2019 and potentially another two cuts for calendar year 2020. That certainly seems to be the vibe, you know, one gets looking at bond yields. I don't think the U.S., a yield curve is going to stay inverted for much longer. So I think, you know, if history is anything to go by, I think the Fed is pretty resolute when it comes to cutting interest rates. You know, just cast your mind back to 2009 when they cut it 500 basis points in the matter of a few weeks. You know, there were extraordinary circumstances then, but you know, I think you will see a relative normalization of the curve, you know, quite a lot sooner than later.
Mike, on to company-specific news, and it was on Friday that the announcement came out, but the market's still digesting this because of the long weekend and Youth Day yesterday. The fact that Old Mutual has parted ways with Chief Executive, now former Chief Executive, Peter Moyo. The replacement has been announced and this is in an interim acting basis, Ian Williamson. He's the man who took over following Mr. Moyo's suspension. Not really too surprising, considering the language and the sudden nature of this announcement and the revelation of this conflict with NMT Capital that benefited Mr. Moyo and his investment company. But over the medium term, what impact do you expect to have this on the organization that's operating in a very competitive space right now? You certainly need a visionary and a full-time hand on the tiller at such an important stage.
By all means, but if its share price is anything to go by, similarly investors were happy because immediately we saw the share price going up by 2%. But for me, what will be more interesting, it will be his side of the story, because by all means, we're not talking about the novice. The guy's been around, he's been involved with Old Mutual before and Alexander Forbes. But if really, did he just do that, paying themselves as ordinary shareholders dividends and ignoring they still have to pay preference shareholders? I think that's totally wrong. And I don't think, given his background, I think there's a lot to do, you know, or there's more to the story, because that is just too obvious to do something like that. He was not supposed to do that. But like I'm saying, it would be important to hear his side of the story. But remember, when he was suspended, he promised us that he's not just going to go out quietly. So we expect him to respond. But I'm surprised we have not got anything. But you are right. A market like that and a giant like that, you need someone hands-on, someone who understands the industry. And I don't think they'll be short of getting someone to replace him. But for me, what's critical is his side of the story, as he promised at some point.
Nesson, how are you reading the Big Green scandal?
Yeah, I think Makwe makes a very valid point. You know, he hasn't actually articulated what has taken place. What we do know is that he was in a position of conflict. There was a dividend declared of 115 million from NMT Capital to ordinary shareholders, bypassing the obligation to preference shareholders, which was Old Mutual. You know, for me, it's fascinating that a director, a CEO, can find himself in a position, you know, of that degree of conflict, and how. But you know, it was disclosed. So, you know, Peter had actually disclosed it to Old Mutual. For me, it's surprising that Old Mutual would actually allow him to be in a position like that in the first place. And I think, you know, with the corporate scandals we've had over the last few years, the likes of Steinhoff, Tongaat and things, you know, this is just another, I think it's a poor reflection on how we do business in South Africa. And we need to ask ourselves if this is what we really want to be doing, in our listed companies, having people that are in these sort of awkward positions of conflict.
Yeah, rather remove any temptation whatsoever. I mean, yes, one can reveal it and one can put in all sorts of Chinese walls. Are they ever effective? I'm certainly given to believe with the number of scandals that we're seeing bubbling up to the surface, Nesson, that they aren't very effective at all. And back to your point, we really have to be asking some deep and searching questions of our corporate governance in South Africa. We're going to be asking some deep and searching questions of our man on the traffic desk, Katleo Mahasi, who's standing by with the latest out on the roads.
You're listening to Classic Business with Michael Avery, brought to you by Altron, there when it matters.
Welcome back. With your view from the market is Nesson Nair, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sasfin Wealth, and Makwe Masilela, the CIO of Makwe Fund Managers. Nesson, great. And we know it's had a torrid couple of years, but when it calls a loss of 11.3 billion rand for the full year, a challenging year, one has to give euphemism of the year award to Brait. The market did like these numbers, up 2.9% on the day. Just talk me through the good, the bad and the ugly.
And I was looking for good, Mike. I honestly was, but it's not easy to identify. If you look at the pattern of the net asset value of Brait over the last few years, and I'm talking, if you extend it to 5 years ago, you'd notice that, you know, net asset values were comfortably above 100 rand, and then it came to about 80 rand, then it was 55 rand, and right now it's sitting at 40 rand, and the share price is slightly below 20 rand. So I think that tells you the whole story. The market doesn't even believe that a 40 rand NAV is actually sustainable. And if you ask yourself, what's given rise to these big write-downs in NAV? And we know about New Look, the fashion retailer that they bought in the UK. I think they paid about 30 billion or 35 billion at the time, successively wrote that down. But they're also writing down other assets now as well. Some of the more what we would describe as some of the more quality businesses like Virgin Active. The concern we have is when there's such big revaluations that take place from one financial year to the other, you know, one really has to ask the question as to, you know, how good directors are at valuing these private equity vehicles. And, you know, with the market placing a 50% discount on its stated NAV at the moment, I think that kind of gives you an indication that people are not very confident that these valuations are what they are presented to be.
And I think you've really put your finger on the core problem here. For an investment holding company like Brait, which started out as a private equity fund purely and then became an investment holding company over time, Makwe, one has to trust that those valuation methodologies are sound. And if you chat to Brait, they'll say, well, they benchmarked against various peers in the sector. They used reasonable PEs, discounted cash flow models, all the traditional tools in the toolbox, and even then were fairly conservative. So why then, on the back of all of that, do we see a decision like the one that took them into New Look, written down to zero from 35 billion rand? Surely heads have got a role on the back of that.
You know, that just confirms that they were just trying to justify that whatever they've done is above board. But markets have just proven that you guys were wrong. Hence, as you said, I mean, to write down something to zero, there's no way you can just get it just so wrong. And I think another thing with these companies, you know, most of them, they used to raise cheap money. But now when things turn around and you get an environment where interest rates are starting to go up, then it becomes very expensive for them to repay. And then those businesses all to find that they're not doing so well. I mean, their preferred markets is South Africa and UK. And we know that ever since the Brexit story, the UK UK itself as an economy, as whatever, it has not been doing well. So it's not surprising that companies from that side of the world didn't do so well. And unfortunately, they were caught in a very awkward position. We also check their debt as well. They want to make sure that they try to reduce debt. And we've said it all over again on this show that the company with huge debt, unfortunately, it will continue to be punished.
And unfortunately, it will continue to be punished as we see that discount between its net asset value as stated and the share price, almost 50% to Nesson's point earlier. Nesson, moving along, and it's just been one corporate scandal after the next. We haven't even touched on Tongaat. Omnia, and apparently I picked up, and it's not disclosed in the trading update, but the company has a large number of intercompany loans which must also be written off. And I think the figure I've heard, which seems like it must be wrong, but I'm hearing R1 billion worth. Have you heard anything?
Not specifically on the issue. I mean, the only news flow that I have is the 2 billion rights issue that they're going to do. Mm. Mike, the reason they give for needing that money is they articulate industry related problems. So they talk about the change in the mining industry, for example, in South Africa. They talk about customers in Zimbabwe that are not performing. They speak about the drought and the lack of rainfall that has affected their fertilizer business. One thing that's obviously made me a bit concerned is that AECI, which operates in exactly the same markets, AECI and Omnia are direct competitors in the explosives fertilizer business. Mm. AECI didn't seem to be experiencing the problems, not to the extent that Omnia has articulated, and the extent to which it's affect Omnia's earnings. I mean, earnings are going to be down 160%, from 10 rand to a loss. And it's hard to imagine that the company was not there's not something else that we don't know about. I hope it's not accounting related. I really do. I don't think the market, and I just certainly don't want to speculate that it is. But it's difficult for me to reconcile what they argue are the major reasons for their poor performance to what is happening in the rest of the market. So I'll be interested to actually go through those results, to see whether it was just specific to Omnia, just a bad call on the market, or whether there was actually something a little bit more sinister.
Well, one hopes there isn't, but as you said, the issue I share is that it doesn't seem to reconcile. Nesson Nair, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sasfin Wealth, and Makwe Maselela, CIO of Makwe Fund Managers, with your view from the market.